Today's guest is David Mundy, who started his career as an acupuncturist and now has over 40 years' experience working and teaching as a homeopath. David was awarded a fellowship of the Society of Homeopaths for service to homeopathy, and he lectures at many homeopathic colleges in the UK and internationally. I personally enjoyed my chat with David today immensely because so much of the content that's coming across my path these days is about how absolutely everything we experience as human beings is simply a mirror of our internal world. And I really love how homeopathy is able to help us even on this deep level of consciousness. If you'd like to find out more about David and his work, you can visit davidmundy.org. That's davidmundy.org. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangout. Today, we get to speak with the legendary David Mundy. Welcome to the show, David.
Welcome.
It's so lovely to have you on today. I had a few people suggest for a while to get you on the show, and I was so grateful when you said yes. So it's really lovely to have you on. And then you sent me a PDF of some of the things that you're going to be talking about today, and I'm like so excited. I feel like a little kid in a candy store, and I can't wait for you to start sharing your knowledge with our listeners. But before we start, you know the drill. Tell us a little bit about how you were first introduced to homeopathy.
Well, when I was a baby, in fact, I was quite ill. I developed quite bad eczema after a smallpox vaccination before I went to Singapore, because my dad was in the army and we had to go abroad. So I had the smallpox vaccine and I developed this eczema, and I had the eczema for quite a long time. And then I developed asthma, as you know, they often go together when they're treated badly. And one night I nearly died from an asthma attack. I think I was about 18 at the time. I had to call the doctor out in the middle of the night. And so that was like a wake-up call. And I thought, I better do something about my health, you know. So I started to sort of research various health protocols and diet and so on. And I changed my diet dramatically because I'd always been interested in Eastern philosophy. I was attracted initially to acupuncture. And I found this acupuncture college and I enrolled. And I did the course there. And I actually practiced acupuncture for about 5 years. But I became a bit frustrated with it because at the time, there was no way of developing it further. People weren't going to China at the time and so on. And it was a bit mechanical. People would come in and say, my knee hurts today. Can you fix my knee and everything? I felt like more like a car mechanic than a healer, you know. So I was actually working as an assistant at the time. And I found this book on the bookshelf of the acupuncture I was working for. And it was Kent's lectures. So I just took it off the shelf and started to read it. And it was like one of those sort of light bulb moments, you know. I mean, I just read a chapter and I thought, wow, this is amazing. So I said to a mutual friend, I just found this book. And she said, oh, I know a homeopath. His name is Martin Miles and he practices in London and he does evening workshops or courses. So I went along and met Martin and Robert Davison. And those two actually started the first homeopathic college in London many, many years ago, 50 years ago. I don't know how long it's been. And so I did the course there, and then I decided to switch. So I made the switch over a year or two, and I switched from the acupuncture to the homeopathy. And so that's what I've been doing for the last 45 years or so, doing homeopathy.
There's a few homeopaths that have gone into homeopathy through the acupuncture route. I mean, Hilary Dorian is one as well. But, you know, there's been a couple of others on the show. I just can't recall the names right now. But it's really cool how all of them say the traditional Chinese medicine and that acupuncture way of looking at the body has really informed their homeopathic prescribing. Do you agree as well?
Yeah, this is true. I mean, particularly the idea of polarity. Because obviously acupuncture is full of polarity, yin yang and all that sort of stuff. And it's actually helped me in homeopathy, because a person who needs a particular remedy can manifest in the complete opposite way to what you'd expect. For an example, if you read Kent's lecture on stramonium, it's basically a picture of a mad person, you know, completely insane, going crazy, trying to kill people and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But the sort of typical stramonium patient that we meet in our consulting room is someone usually who the violence has been done to. So they're actually the victim of violence rather than the perpetrator. So they come in and they're like terrified and they're looking like this, and they're not violent at all, but they've experienced the violence, you know. In the same way, instead of having a fear of dogs, they actually might have a dog as a constant companion for reassurance, or they may even breed Rottweilers. So it's opposite side of the remedy. And I think that's where acupuncture has been very useful to me, to look at things in polarities.
Oh, I'll never forget Julie Andrews, who was one of my lecturers in New Zealand. She had this client who was actually the child of a homeopath and who had already seen several other homeopaths. He was this big, bulky, rugby-playing, you know, macho man. And none of what they prescribed for him helped. And then Julie just literally said to herself, okay, what is the complete opposite of what I'm seeing? And she prescribed pulsatilla for this guy, and he was cured. And that was the first time that I finally saw this idea of, oh, okay, it can look exact opposite. And of course, that can sometimes be the frustrating part of learning materia medica, because it can be, for example, saccharum, it can be extremely clingy or the exact opposite, or they can constantly suck their thumb or never suck their thumb in their life. Or sometimes it's so frustrating. It's like, just make up your mind.
It's like the remedy aurum. If you read Patak's Materia Medica on aurum, you see a very desperate person wanting to jump out of a window.
Mm.
But the typical aurum that we see is an industrious, hardworking, successful business person, you know, hasn't reached that stage yet. Yeah. So you've got two factors in remedies. One, you've got the polarity, and the average, you've got those different stages of a remedy. So in those Materia Medica, you don't get the early stages, you just get the end stage of a remedy, like aurum wanting to jump out of a window, you know. But it's only where everything's gone wrong for them and they failed did they reach that stage. So those sort of pocket Materia Medicas can be quite misleading.
Exactly. But you've just segued us beautifully in what we're going to be talking about today, the mirror and the magnet. What does that mean? And how did you get to this idea? You've kind of alluded to that already.
Yeah, well, some years ago, quite a few years ago, I studied with a Israeli homeopath called Joseph Reeves, R-E-E-V-E-S. I don't know if he's still around or not, but he came over to England for a few seminars. Jeremy Scherer actually introduced him, and we used to go to these seminars, just a few of us. And Joseph introduced all these ideas. He introduced the Mapa Mundi, for example, which he called the circle in those days. You know, I think Misha changed the name of it. So he introduced the circle, which is all about elements and things. And then he talked about this hierarchy. I think I sent you a diagram of this pyramid where you have the will and the understanding at the top, and then you go through the various levels from refined to more coarse and to the body. So that really was based on Kent's philosophy. And of course, Kent was my first major influence when I first started to study homeopathy. So the whole idea of a human being consisting of will and understanding, I thought it was a much better model than, say, mind, emotions, and spiritual. The will and the understanding seemed to make a lot of sense of me. And the will, of course, as Kent says, is expressed in the loves and the hates. So that's the attraction and the repulsion. And we all have those. It's our preferences, isn't it? We love this and we hate that. And the patient comes and says, I hate this weather, I love this. And so what we call the loves and the hates. And Kent would say, well, a craving for sugar is a love for sugar expressed through the stomach. And then underneath that, he had the what he called the understanding, which means one's perception of reality. So if you understand something, you have a clear perception. Like Hardiman says in the organon, if the physician clearly perceives what needs to be cured. So if that's not working properly, then we have delusions. There's sort of a misinterpretation of reality, often based on our past experience. Sometimes we inherit these patterns as well. So I reckon that the will is basically the loves and hates, which is basically the magnet. So a magnet either attracts or repulses certain things. And then the understanding is a delusion, which is the mirror.
I think it might be worth like talking a bit more about that delusion, because I know that the podcast is 50% homeopaths, 50% general public. And we as homeopaths understand what you mean by delusion. But just can you tell us a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Yes. Yeah, we're interviewing a patient, you can say, tell me your dreams. And say, but they won't, if you can't say, tell me your delusions.
Yes.
Because they look at you crazy. Because normally when we say delusion, we mean someone like who thinks they're Napoleon or some crazy sort of person. So in homeopathy, a delusion is the fixed belief in something. Like, for example, I'm ugly. That's a delusion. People will always cheat you.
I'm not, you know, if somebody doesn't feel part of their family, I often see, you know, people say, oh, they're unlovable, or their partner will always cheat on them. They might, but could also be a delusion.
Exactly.
Or that people are always looking at them, or always people are always talking behind their back, or that they don't make friends easily.
Yeah, when I'm teaching delusion, I give the analogy of a married couple. The wife says to the husband, you don't love me anymore. You know, we've been married too many years. You don't love me anymore. And he says, of course I love you. He says, no, you always used to buy me flowers, you know, and I can't remember the last time you bought me any flowers. So the husband goes away and he thinks about it. And he thinks, she's right. I should pay more. I should buy flowers. So he goes out and buys a fantastic bouquet of flowers for her. And he presents it to her. And she looks at it and she says, who is she? So you can't talk someone out of a delusion, basically. It's impossible to talk someone out of it because that's a fixed idea. I had a very good case that illustrates this. One of my first cases, actually, and there was a young boy, and he was brought to me by his mother because he was very violent, very aggressive, even to the extent that he would actually attack her physically. You know, I think once he took a knife and went for her. So he was only 10 years old. She was actually terrified of him, very, very violent. So I was interviewing and I was getting nowhere because he was just sitting there with his arms and legs crossed, like he wasn't going to talk to me. So I asked the mother to leave the room and I would try and sort of make some contact with him. And I said to him, so how are you liking your new school? Because he'd moved from a different area. And he went, that's all right. I said, well, is it all right or not? He doesn't sound too keen. He said, it's all right at the moment. So I said, oh, at the moment, you mean you don't expect it to last? He said, no, of course not. I said, what do you mean? So then he was really opening up then. He said, well, at the last school, any problems, I was always the one that got it. Anything that was, any fights, a teacher would immediately look at me and say, what are you doing? Why are you starting this? You know, he said, but now these people, so-called friends of mine, they're punching me or something. And if I hit back, then the teacher sees me and then it's my fault. So it's just like, how come it's always me? It's always me. It's always me. And he was at night, he would always go in and into his mother's room. Unfortunately, she had a new partner at that time, so it was not very good for her. Because his father had left, by the way. The parents had separated about 2 years before, and he was very angry at it. He was very angry at his mother, very angry at the father for the separation. And so the mother had a new partner, but every night he would be terrified in the dark and go in to his mother's room, and someone wouldn't leave her alone. And I noticed that he had a huge crack in the middle of his lower lip, like the Grand Canyon. It was like massive. And the mother was always putting the Vaseline and creams on it, but it just wouldn't. And it actually came around the time of the divorce, which I thought symbolically was quite interesting.
Split
left and right. You know? So in the early days of my homeopathy, I mean, it was before computers even, and I just had my Kent's repertory. And I was always trying to minimize my rubrics, not to put too many rubrics in, because the more rubrics you put in, the more you come up with sulfur or lycopodium or whatever. So I put in, well, obviously he's got a persecution complex that people are always getting at me. So I put in delusions persecuted from Kent's repertory. And I thought, well, the other strange, rare and peculiar in this case is this crack in the middle of the lower lip because of its intensity. Intensity, by the way, is another factor in homeopathy. How strong is a symptom? I learned that from George Vathorkas when I studied with him. He said it's very important. He said, because fear of heights is very common. He said, but what if it's like a person can't even stand on a chair, you know? Or fear of spiders is common, but what happens if you show them a plastic spider and they faint or something like that?
So I always say love of music, because I've got a lot of children in my clinic. So I always ask, does your child like music? And most kids do. But if the parent says he has to have music on 24/7, then you know the intensity is strong enough that you can take the rubric desire music or music ameliorates.
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I took this symptom, this crack in the middle of the lower lip, and it came up with 5 or 6 remedies only. And of course, Nat Mew and Pulsatilla came up. I thought, well, obviously, it's not those remedies, yeah? And Calc Carb came up, and China came up, and Drosera came up. So Drosera is a remedy, I think, has a lot of violence in it. Like the whooping cough, it's not a mild whooping cough. And it's violence in paroxysms, because they're not violent all the time. And this boy wasn't violent all the time, was in paroxysms, you know? So I thought, well, he hasn't got whooping cough, but this is on the mental plane. So let's try Drosera, you know. And also I found Drosera had many rubrics about anxiety at night, fear of being alone at night, can't be alone at night, all the stuff he was showing about being with his mother. So it fitted the whole case. And so I gave him Drosera and everything was cured. It was completely settled into his new score. His
violent,
his crack in the middle of the lower lip went. It was like one of my early miraculous cures. It was a real carrot.
You would just never think of Drosera for something like that. Wow, that is really cool. Was it under delusion persecuted as well?
Yes, it's one of the main remedies.
Oh, wow.
Because if you think about it, you think about the source, you know, because you've got this.
It's a carnivorous plant, hey?
Carnivorous plant, but emits this sweet, sickly, sweet smell that attracts all the insects to it. So in a way, it's pretending to be their friend. They pretend to be my friends, but they're not really my friends, you know. So it attracts the insects and the fly, and as soon as they land, they can't get off.
Mm.
You know, and it eats them, you know. So it's, by analogy, it's quite a similar idea, you know.
Very, very cool. And how do you, I mean, talk to us a little bit more about this mirror. And I've recently had Yanita Venema on the show as well, who's the developer of the Present Child program, which I just mentioned to you before we started recording. And she talks about how our children are our mirrors and how we're each other's remedy and how the things that we perceive in our kids are really the things that we need to heal in ourselves. But I mean, you talk about this on an even wider spectrum where everything perceiving.
Yeah, everything's a mirror. I would say everything is a mirror. Everything in the world is a mirror because we attract certain things.
Mm.
Obviously, if people get into one bad relationship after another. How come this is happening? In psychology, they call it a pattern, you know, it's attracting these certain things. So I've seen people actually, it's almost like we're trying to find our remedy. I'm trying to find my remedy. And if it's a sea remedy that I need, by some strange instinct, you're actually attracted to the sea and you go in there and you can take up scuba diving. I've had patients like this who've needed sea remedies. They are attracted to the sea. They're looking for it. They're actually looking for it. So it's like, I'll just tell you one more case that one of my favorite cases of all time. And this was, again, fairly many years ago. And this woman came, she had this acne problem, and she had problems in her relationship. Her main complaint was that as soon as she had the child, her husband was able to carry on his creative job, but she had to stay at home doing all the domestic stuff and everything like that. And I haven't got time to go in the whole case, but I decided on diamond as a remedy for her, adamas, you know.
Mm.
So it was a paper case at the time. It was a case presented at one of my postgraduate study groups. I said, well, give her a diamond, adamas. And so she was given adamas, and it was a miraculous cure. And I said, well, can you get her to come back on video? We'll just video her, and if she's willing, you know. And so she decided to come, and she sat down, and she said, well, she said, my life's been transformed. But I'll tell you what happened. She said, my homeopath sent the remedy, but I didn't take it immediately, because I don't always take it immediately. I just put it on the mantelpiece and wait for the right time to take it. But I suddenly had this idea. I needed to do a guided meditation, something I've never done before. And she said, I sat down and I did this guided meditation where I met my elder self at that sort of age 90 or something, very wise. And she took my hand and she took me down into the center of the earth where there was all this fire. And she said, and I felt I needed to eat the fire. I felt really strong desire. I should be eating this fire. And then she took me to the surface of the planet again. And then we were sitting there and all these snakes and things came out of my body. And then she looked at me with great compassion and she leaned over and kissed me and diamonds came out of her mouth into me. And I kissed her back and diamonds came out of my mouth. And then there was this baby in the sky and diamonds were this and diamonds. It's like diamonds, diamonds, diamonds. And she didn't know the name of the remedy as well. It didn't know that she was going to be given diamonds. So somehow, I don't know what happened there. But then she said, yeah, she's, I was on all these drugs, you know. She said, but I decided to stop them. Something you shouldn't really do with these strong antidepressants. Mm. But I decided to stop them suddenly, took the remedy. And she said, I let fall with 7-league boots. And I said, what do you mean 7-league boots? She said, well, that's what dwarfs wear, you know, in fairy stories. They wear these league boots and they can go 7 leagues with one. That's significant later. So she said, also, she said that when I got engaged, I didn't want to have a diamond because of all the violence, because I used to live next door to a diamond merchant. She said, there's all these mirror. This is the gay in the mirror thing. Live next door to a diamond merchant. And the things he told me were so cruel, what happens in the diamond mine. So I decided to have a tattoo, and she showed me a tattoo of a diamond on her finger.
Aww.
So she'd actually tattooed her remedy into her body. Her husband had done it as well.
Aww. You said that you listened to the Butterfly podcast that we had on, and on there I mentioned about a case that I had where the client had actually long sleeve shirts on. And once I told her, I've got to give her the blue morpho butterfly, she pulled up her sleeve and there was a butterfly there. But I also can't tell you how many times I've prescribed lacanine to people who breed dogs. And I never thought to ask them, you know, it's like when I say what the remedy is from, and then they'd laugh and they're like, well, I breed dogs. So, oh, okay.
Because there's a danger. You have to be careful. Just because someone's got a picture of a tattoo of a scorpion, you don't automatically give them the scorpion. But it is amazing as sort of a confirmatory symptom. But one more thing, I related it all to the story of Snow White, because in Snow White, you have the seven dwarfs.
Mm.
And where do they work?
In the mine. In the diamond. Oh, is it a diamond mine? I know about a mine. I never thought to ask as a kid what sort of mine it was.
And then you've got Snow White doing all the housework, all the drudgery.
Mm.
And her beauty is not recognized until the prince comes and kisses her. So in a way, metaphorically, it was very similar to my patient. Her creativity wasn't being recognized. She was doing all the drudgery in the home and so on and so forth. So it's like, this is why homeopathy for me is such an amazing system. It's so holistic, incredible. It just takes everything into account, doesn't it, homeopathy? Yeah?
It really does. And what about, I mean, you've talked about the victim and the aggressor, like it's kind of two sides of the same coin.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And we always attract our opposite. I would say 99.9% of the time, if you ask someone to describe their partner, they say, well, they're opposite to me. You're thinking, why the hell did you get together? Mm. Well, obviously, they've got things in common, some interests, but intrinsically, they're completely opposite.
Mm.
So it's yin yang. Maybe we need the opposite to complete us, but then after a while, because we haven't integrated those things into our being, it becomes an aggravation. Then we have to get rid of the other side. But also, it works the other way. It's like I had this patient who did very well on the remedy Elaps. She was a Greek patient. But she told me the story that when she was 5 years old, her father worked in the fields and he took her in the field and he put her into a tree trunk, a hole in a tree or something, just to rest while he was working in the field. And he came back and he picked her up and there was a snake underneath her.
Mm.
So even at 5 years old, she was attracting that snake energy.
Mm.
And she needed that snake energy, obviously not to get bitten by a snake, but...
Yeah, Elaps is a snake remedy for our listeners. That I can't remember which of the snake. Is it a rattle? It's not a rattlesnake.
It's the coral. Coral snake. Beautiful striped, you know, black and yellow and stripes on it. It's beautiful. Very toxic snake.
Mm.
Very toxic.
I have to ask you something else as well, because in your PowerPoint that you sent me, you mentioned there about the opposites are equally true of whatever is said. And I once had a homeopath tell me that. They said, if a client says to you, it's not that I'm jealous, but da 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 da, you should take it as them saying, I am jealous. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, if it's in the case, it's important. You know, that's why I don't distinguish between fears, dreams, and delusions.
Mm.
They're all the same for me, you know. I mean, a well-known remedy can illustrate that, because Nature Muir has dreams of robbers, fear of robbers, and delusions of robbers, right?
Yeah.
And when someone wakes up in the middle of the night and they hear the noise, who's that? You know, is it a delusion robbers are in the house, or is it a fear of robbers? Same.
It's all the same energy.
It's all the same energy, really. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
I actually had an interesting discussion with Luke Norland the other day, because I posted in the Radar Opus group where I'm struggling to repertorize something. Then they have this great Facebook group that Luke Norland and Matt Zorn and those guys help you with, you know, getting the right rubric. And I was like, this client keeps talking about being manipulated. That was the word. They keep going saying they're being manipulated. And if I just go under mind manipulated, there was only like one or two remedies. And then Luke said, it's the same thing of the same coin. So actually look at the wider rubric, manipulative, which has got something like 50 remedies in it. So whether you're feeling, if you're feeling manipulated, it's because the energy of manipulation has not been integrated into your own energy. And that's why you're experiencing it as being manipulated. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like that was such a truth bomb for me.
And that's the mirror.
Mm.
Unresolved things are mirrored back to us by life events or dreams. So dreams or life events mirror back that which needs to be cured. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, about that, because there was only one remedy, which was electricitas under the rubric mind manipulated, but under mind manipulative, there was, 50 remedies for me to look at. And that made a lot more sense then.
It can also be like deceitful.
Oh, you know, true. Mm.
I had this case many years ago. He was a retired professional soldier and he was in the army for many years. And he did a lot of fighting, you know, and then he retired, but he became a mercenary. So he carried on fighting and then he retired. And within a few months of retiring, he developed an aggressive cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, this cancer, he said, it's not going to beat me. I'm going to fight it to the end. So I thought, this guy's got a delusion. He's a soldier.
Mm.
and he was a soldier. He lived out his delusion. And when he couldn't fight anymore, his body produced a disease that would allow him to carry on his delusion, which was to fight everything. And then he said, once in the war, he said, we were fighting away. And then he said, there was an explosion near me and my corporal was shot in the throat. We were buried alive and I was covered in blood. And he had gallbladder problems. And all his symptoms repertorized out to chelidonium, just on a purely simplistic way, you know, chelidonium. Mm-hmm. And I looked up chelidonium and I found delusions see soldiers, or delusions seeing a soldier shot, delusions buried alive and covered in blood. It was like all there in the chelidonium story. It's almost like he'd read the remedy before he was incarnated and decided to be that remedy.
I mean, I think that's one of the best parts of our job. When you have a case like that, that satisfaction of reading in the Materia Medica and seeing that all there and learn. Like, and after you saw that, David, like you would never look at chelidonium the same way ever again. Hey, once you have a case like that and it's cemented in your brain, that client and that case is always stuck there. I have a few like that as well, where it's just beautiful.
I was experimenting on myself recently. I shouldn't do this, but I took hawk, a butio, okay? I took it.
Hawk, and there are many made from hawk?
Yeah, from hawk, yeah. So I go into town to a coffee shop and I leave my bag in the coffee shop, a computer bag.
I know.
Fortunately, it was empty. There's no computer in it, but I left my bag. I didn't realize until late that night and I said, oh my God, I left my computer bag. And so anyway, fortunately, someone picked it up and it was safe. So I thought, I wonder what this has got to do with Butio. So I looked it up and it said, dreams of losing a bag.
Oh, no.
One remedy.
That's why I take my hat off to provers, people who prove remedies, because you just don't know what's going to come up for you.
I mean, synchronicity is such an amazing thing. Mm. Yeah. I decided that my kitchen knives were blunt and needed a sharpener. So I went into town to the shop and I said, can you tell me of a professional knife sharpener? And they said, no, we can sell you a knife. I said, no, I want a professional. He said, we don't know anybody. So I walk out the shop. Opposite the shop, there's a church and a churchyard. And I see a van with the back open. And I walk over and I say, what are you doing? He said, I'm a professional knife sharpener. I said, you're just the man I'm looking for. I mean, what are the chances of that?
I know.
And then 2 days later, I'm in the car with a friend of mine and we're discussing flying. And I said, you know, back in the 60s, this little package tours, they just started because people couldn't afford to fly until a guy called Freddie Laker came along and sort of started the whole sort of cheap flights to Europe thing, you know? And she said, oh, I met Freddie Laker once. I shook his hand, which already sort of a strange coincidence because he's not talked about very much, this guy, unknown guy. So we go to the pub, and we're sitting there having a drink. And this guy comes out of the pub, walks towards us with a T-shirt, and it had Freddie Laker Airlines on it.
Oh, my gosh.
So we live in a magical world, but yeah, most people don't see it.
Well, I've started tapping into that magic, and I've actually used it to my advantage because I am so overwhelmed with so many different things that I have to do with the podcast. And my clinic's super busy and I have 4 homeopathists on my team and I have hundreds of clients and I've got 4 staff and I've got 2 VAs and we've got I've got a gazillion books and a gazillion courses that sitting there waiting for me to read and learn, you know, which I constantly do because I know that the answer for each client is out there. And I've actually gotten to this point now, David, where I don't stress about any of that anymore. And I just know that synchronicity will mean that the thing that I need to do right now will be at the forefront. So something will happen and then we'll be like, okay, this is what you need to do now. And this is what you need to do now. Exactly. I've kind of surrendered to the fact that what is for me will present itself. So the thing that I need to focus my energy on is what will be in front of me right now. And that's really helped me a lot the last few months getting through my workload and just trusting if I'm meant to remember it or do it and enough things will come up and remind me to do it. And if there is a specific client that I'm struggling with, the course of the book that I need to read to help that client will be the one that's in front of me. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm struggling with a case, I realize I'm struggling. And so I just sit back and I thought, okay, I give up.
Mm. Yes.
And somehow something might happen then, you know, when you give up. You know,
There's magic and surrender. I saw one as you were reading through your notes, the PDFs, the PowerPoints that you sent through. I think you wrote something in there about kind of surrendering to the case. I have that as well. Like sometimes I'm literally sitting there and this person is talking to me and I'm like, I have no idea what remedy to give you. Exactly. And now that I recognize that I surrender, and once that surrender comes, that flow can happen. And that's, you know, we call it intuition, but it's not intuition. Like it's 4 years of study plus loads of professional development and courses and other cases that culminates into what we call intuition.
Yes.
Which I mean, will then come up.
Your patient may need a remedy that you know nothing about.
Exactly.
If you don't know anything about butterflies and your patient needs a butterfly remedy, then what are you going to do? You know, you're going to go around in circles, repertorizing, nothing really fits, you know. Sometimes you have to think outside the box. Yeah.
Do you know what? Something I've had happen a lot is if I'm thinking of a random remedy, something's popping in mind, I wonder if it's this, then the client will literally at that moment say something that confirms that remedy. And it's happened so many times now that it's not even funny anymore. I kind of expect it to happen.
I have a little game I play because I send out a questionnaire before patient comes and they fill in this questionnaire. It's on my website, you know, check it out. So they have this questionnaire and I try and work out their remedy from the questionnaire. And I would say 99.9% of the time, the remedy I come up with is not the remedy they need from the questionnaire.
Okay.
Last week, actually, this happened. And this patient I'd seen many years ago, about 15 years ago, I think I saw her. And I helped her a bit, but she didn't come anymore in any way. But my friend who knows her said, oh, she's very ill at the moment. I said, well, get her to come back. So she came back to see me. And so, but before that, I discussed the case with the friend who knew her very well, you know, and she wants to be free. She wants to be independent. She wants to travel, but she has to look after her husband and her child and everything. And the relationship's not good, but she wants to be a free spirit and she wants to, you know, escape from all this. And she kept talking about, my wings have been clipped, you know, I want to fly. Wow. So I thought, oh, this is an easy case. This is obviously, you know, a bird remedy. And this conflict between responsibility and freedom is very hawk-like, you know. So it's probably the remedy's hawk. And so she comes and she sits down. And again, she starts talking about, oh, no, about flying away and everything. But as the more she talks, I think, you know what, this doesn't feel quite right. I don't know, there's something about this. I'm not really sure this is the right remedy. So I just let her keep talking, you know. And then I said, do you have any dreams? Because I always ask about dreams. Said, yeah, I had this dream once, very memorable. And a lot of water in my dreams. I'm always dreaming about water. And I thought, when I checked it out, well, Hawk doesn't really have water stuff in it. There's not many water dreams, anything like that. But she had loads of water dreams. And she said, I had this dream when I was by a pool in my property in France. And I felt so connected to nature. She was really into nature and trees and flowers. And her main love was gardening. Absolutely obsessed. I just love gardening. And she, in my dream, she says, I'm lying there and I curl up and I actually get absorbed into the earth. I dissolve into the earth. And I feel like a doe. I said, what do you mean doe? Like a little deer. She says, I feel like a little deer in the woods and I'm curled up in this thing. So then because I got Jeremy's proving of Dhamma Dhamma, I checked it out. Everything in the case was there in Dhamma Dhamma, you know, the deer. And then I found this rubric. Found this rubric. Let me see if I can find it here.
It's beautiful when clients get into that space where they, like, that's my perfect place to be. If I can get into this meditative state while the client is talking and they can just flow and just, it doesn't matter how, like, you know, the more crazy it sounds, the better. But if you can get them into that state of where they're just free to express.
The rubrics I used were the main theme of escape from Marilee's theme. Dreams of water, wants to give up her responsibility, oversensitive to colours. And the rubric that has four remedies in was mind, connection, feeling of earth too. Feeling of connection.
That's nice.
And that's what she was describing in that thing. So it just goes to show, yeah, be careful. Yeah,
that's a trap. It's a tricky trap, that one, trying not to make the case into what you wanted to be. Hey, like exactly. Always staying open. So how do you feel, David, that homeopaths can use this law of the mirror and the magnet and opposites and this law of attraction? Like, how can we use that in our prescribing and how can that become a tool for us in our clinic?
It's not a new idea in a way, is it? I mean, it's been there all the time. I've just made it into a sort of a system. I don't know really how to answer that question because it's so much a part of me now. I just think that way all the time, you know. I have this thing that you can always tell when something's supposed to happen. It happens. People can't help. who they are and what they do. Mm. So it's very predictable.
Mm.
But in a way, it's all preordained. And Nux Vomica, I can't help be but Nux Vomica.
Mm.
Also, exactly. I can't stop crying and be, you know, it's just the way they are, you know,
mm.
but not trying to change that.
I had a
it's like the scorpion and the frog, scorpion and frog story, isn't it? You know, mm. you've heard that.
No, tell me.
Well, it's a great story. It's like the scorpion wants to cross the river, you know, but it can't swim.
Oh.
So it sees a frog there and it says, can I hop on your back and can you take me across the river? And the frog says, no, no way, scorpion, because you've got a nasty sting there and you're going to sting me. And so the scorpion says to the frog, don't be silly. If I sting you, we'll both die. You know, we'll drown. So the frog sees the logic of this statement and so allows the scorpion to climb on its back, and they get halfway across the river when the frog feels a terrible sting in its back as the scorpion stings it. And then the frog cries out, why did you do that? We're both going to drown. And the scorpion says, yeah, I'm sorry, but I can't help it. It's in my nature.
Yeah. So just being aware of your clients going to express their states no matter what. And that's why I always say, like, I feel with my clients, it doesn't really matter what they tell me. They can really talk about anything because it's going to be expressed. Yeah. Mm. Just this week, I actually had a client and I was thinking, Lac Delphinum, the remedy made from the milk of a dolphin, popped into my head as a remedy for her. But just before that, she was sitting still for a while and she was like trying to think of how to explain it. And then she said out loud, actually, I'm just going to say it how it is because I know that the way that I express myself is important to you. So I'm not going to try and change the word that I was going to use to say to you. So it was interesting that she was aware of that. And then she said, I felt like a fish out of water, just as I was thinking of Lac Delphinum. And I was like, oh, that's really cool that you thought that, that you said that. And interested to hear, you know, how she goes. And she did the hands. I was talking about fun and having fun and did the hand signals. And thought that was quite a clear one. And then she said, I felt like a fish out of water. And I was like, well, now I have to give you this remedy. Yes.
There's a caveat here. You have to be really careful because especially, you know, when students in the first, second, third years, they hear all this stuff, but you need to get the basics.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got
to have the modalities, the generals, and all this sort of stuff. You really have to know this stuff. You can't just, otherwise you start prescribing on all sorts of things. Mm. It doesn't work that way.
I'm really glad that you made that differentiation. I think it's really important. And I'm really glad for my classical grounding that I had. And I feel it's a journey for us as a homeopath. And now I've got that first decade behind me of the basics.
Yes.
And now I feel I can go and play around with things because I've got the basics down packed. So I'm glad that you said that because more than a dozen of my clients have started studying homeopathy just in the last year. And I know a lot of them are involved in my circles and my Facebook group and listen to the podcast. And a part of me is thinking, I hope they don't just jump into that straight away. Because if you don't have those basics right, you're going to get lost pretty quickly.
It's like, you know, Rajan Sankara introduced a sensation method some years ago, and there were even sensation methodologists springing up, you know.
Mm.
It's like, it's a fantastic system, but you have to understand that Rajan is rooted for years in basic classical Hahnemannian, Boehringhausen homeopathy. He's got all that stuff done, you know. This is something in addition to that. It's not instead of that, you know. Mm. And every case is different. When you sit down, you don't know what sort of patient you're going to get in front of you. You can't apply a sensation method to every patient. It doesn't work.
Can I tell you a little story? Is that the first homeopathic college I trained at, it was the first time that they had started the degree program, and the homeopaths who did the training then, it was actually naturopathic college, and then they had this, you could do a Bachelor of Natural Medicine specializing in homeopathy. And they only taught sensation methods. So for my first 2 years, that was all we were taught. And then I got pregnant and I would have had to finish my degree that year. And I didn't want to put my newborn baby in full-time care. So I was forced to go to a different college, which is where I found the New Zealand College of Classical Homeopathy. And I got a recognition of prior learning and went on there. It's really interesting is that they teach classical homeopathy, and none of the that qualified from that first college that I was at have actually gone on to continue practicing homeopathy. And I think it was a big letdown that they were only taught sensation method, not the basics of classical homeopathy. I've never mentioned that on the podcast before because I have to be a little bit careful, but I really think that was the downfall. And I'm so grateful for what happened. Initially, I was really annoyed because I would have had my qualification after 3 years. Now I had to study an extra fourth year. So it was more money, longer time. But I am so grateful because I don't think I would still be practicing if I had carried on with the first college. So glad you've made that distinction.
Yes, yes. like it's good to have someone like Manzoor on to show you the other ways of doing homeopathy.
Yeah. Yes, we mentioned him quickly on the podcast. I'm really sad that there wasn't a longer show, but there was, a time thing. And so he arrived for the interview half an hour late, and I had some, you know, people on the hour, every hour, so we couldn't talk longer, which was why that episode was like bang, 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 bang. But I mean, he's doing some really interesting work out of Pakistan.
I couldn't work like that myself because I'm more interested in the more esoteric side of homeopathy as well. But I think it's an important part of homeopathy that shouldn't be neglected, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Well, David, it's been wonderful chatting with you. Is there a final message that you want to leave our listeners with? And can you tell them how they can get hold of you?
Yes, there's my website, which is www.davidmundy.org. And my email, david@davidmundy.org. Contact me. These days, I'm only doing Zoom appointments. I decided to stop doing my clinic in London because I live in Devon and it was too much to go there every week and so. So, and also with COVID, I was forced into doing Zoom, and I find it works really well. I had some resistance at the beginning, but in practice, actually, it works very, very well. It's not a problem for me or my patients. So I'm open to Zoom appointments. But if you visit my website, all my details and contact details are on the website, you know. And if someone wants to come and see me, just fill in the questionnaire, email it to me, and I get back to them. Mm. What was the other question you asked me?
Any final messages that you want to leave us with?
Oh, any final messages? Have fun. Yeah, I mean, homeopathy for me is not just a healing medical system. It's actually a philosophy of life, you know. The other thing about homeopathy is it's infinite. You never stop learning. That's the amazing thing about That's why I stopped doing acupuncture, because I'd reached a plateau and I couldn't go any further. But now with homeopathy, the sky's the limit, as they say. You can just, you're always learning. And patients are our best teachers, aren't they? At the end of the day, you know, patients are our best teachers. I know you asked somebody their favorite remedies.
That was the earlier episodes. But if you've got some you want to tell us, please do.
My favorite remedy, but I have some favorite paragraphs from the Organon.
Oh, yes. Tell us that.
Well, the number one, of course, is 153, which is, you know, look for the characteristic symptoms of strange, rare, and peculiars, you know. And then I like paragraph 7, which is really to do with the mirror and the magnet, you know, because he says the outwardly reflected picture of the internal disorder of the disease.
So he was ahead of his time, hey?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also 179 to 184 is where he talks about zigzagging in a case, where you give what he calls a partially homeopathic remedy. That's what we do all the time in practice. We all like to present these wonderful cured cases, but very often we don't get the remedy and we have to zigzag our way through a process of remedies. Mm. And I think people confuse that with layers. They thought, oh, it was a layered case. You know, but no, it wasn't a layered case. It was a layered homeopath. Okay. So you just saw different aspects of the case at different times. Mm. But I'm not to say there aren't layered cases. There are layered cases. I've had cases where they're definitely layered. But most of the time, it's a zigzag. When you give a remedy that's, you know, close, but no coconut, and then you zigzag your way. So it's important to know these things.
You can't drop that bombshell to us right here at the end of the episode, because that's a whole other can of worms. It's not fair. I have questions I want to ask. Oh, that's so true. Okay, you got to have to come back and we need to unpack that, because I have a gazillion questions.
Okay.
I have lots and lots of questions for you about that. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, David. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for asking me. I really enjoyed myself. Thank you.